of the reasons I love to sing is I had an experience in my life where I didn't get to sing, or I couldn't sing. So in the early 2000s, I was in the Marine Corps, and I was part of the initial invasion into Iraq in the infantry. And as we were going across the desert, we would each night, we would stop, and we'd dig holes, and we'd sit in these holes, and we'd watch our perimeter. And often I would find myself in the middle of a hole about up to here, and I'd be sitting there just kind of scanning the floor of the desert. And I don't know, maybe around here you guys have stayed outside a little bit at night and looked up at the stars. Have you ever done that? They're beautiful. Northeast Pennsylvania's got some beautiful skies, but I'm telling you the truth, it is nothing compared to the middle of the desert. Nothing. Without clouds, without light, the stars multiply by thousands. And in the middle of the desert, I remember so many times just standing there looking up at the sky and wondering, this is incredible. I just want to sing. I just want to praise God because this is what he made. Oh man, this is so beautiful. But I couldn't sing. Not because I had laryngitis or anything, but because in the middle of, an environment of war, you can't do that. I can't start screaming or singing and make a bunch of racket and noise because the enemy might know where we are, right? And so in that position, we wouldn't have any lights on. We wouldn't make any noise. And so it would be completely silent. So the enemy wouldn't know where we are. But it drove me nuts because all I wanted to do was sing. I love singing. So every time I come to church, whether it's here or at my home church at Restored down in Wilkes-Barre, I love to sing. Because experiences like that shape our lives, don't they? And maybe you guys have had experiences like that that shape your life. Let me share another experience with you. Because experiences have that ability. Experiences just completely shape who we are after that. Another experience like that for me is when I became a father. And I know there's a lot of parents. I saw all the young kids running around a little bit ago. So I know there's a lot of parents here. But think back with me to the experience of becoming a parent. Now, granted, I think you'd all agree that experience of becoming a parent was very different for me than it was for my wife, right? Okay, we all agree on that. But listen, the experience of becoming a dad is crazy cool. I mean, from the moment my wife told me that we were expecting a child, the whole process of pregnancy and then the birth and then taking the baby home and all the stuff that changes once he gets home, man, being a dad was crazy awesome. I love being a daddy. I love it. That experience shapes my life, right? And yours too. Have you ever considered, though, if you took those experiences, and if you took those grand experiences that seem to shape our lives, and have you ever boiled them down to the moment? But what I mean is the actual moment in time where the whole thing changes, where it turns the corner, the light switch is flipped. I mean, like everything changes right then. I'll give you an example. Thinking of being a dad, I remember when my wife first told me we were pregnant, I was really excited. I remember finding out we were having a son. I was so excited. I remember the whole 9 months of pregnancy. Well, obviously different than she does, but like I remember that, right? Okay, and then I remember going and the whole process of him being born, and I remember the moment the whole thing changed for me. The moment where I held him for the first time. After he was born, the nurses cleaned him up and they handed him to me. And right there in the hospital, I held my son for the first time. You guys remember those moments? Like at that moment, it got real. And I got that. It got real, real fast. All of a sudden, it was like, I'm a dad. Like he's my son. Like that moment, the whole thing changed for me. Not that the experience didn't have an amazing impact on my life, but that moment, that's where it all changed. You guys, I mean, if you think about the experiences that shape our lives and your life in particular, think about those experiences, think about the moments, those specific moments. Now, I don't want to paint the picture that they're all these amazing blessings. Some of those moments wreck our lives. Like maybe in your life you've gotten one of those phone calls where you're not real sure what it's about, but you You can start to hear the trembling on the other side of the phone, and you don't know what it is, but it's not good. We're like the moment where you go to get your test results and you go to the doctor's office and he says, why don't you sit down for this? Like those moments, they change our lives, don't they? In a moment, everything can change. A moment can change everything. That fast. A moment has the ability, it sets the stage or the platform to change everything. But how it changes everything is up to us. And we don't have to think about that, but think for a moment. I can respond to those moments with grief and bitterness or with trust, with resentment and anger, or with some kind of joy. I mean, those moments, I can either embrace them and move on, or I can let that hold me and consume me with anxiety and worry, right? Depending on what the moment is, it can wreck us. It can bring us great joy, but how we respond to those moments changes everything. Listen, our response to a moment like that changes everything. This morning, what we're going to look at is one of those moments. If you have your Bible with you, turn to John chapter 1. And what we're going to look at this morning, briefly, if you just give me a moment of your time this morning, here's what I'd like to do, is look at three conversations that happen really quick and only in a few verses. But there's three conversations, and it sets up how much can change in a moment. So we're going to start in John chapter 1, verse 43. And let's look at the first conversation. Verse 43 and 44. The next day, he purposed to go into Galilee, and he found Philip. And Jesus said to him, "Follow me." Now, Philip was from Bethsaida, the city of Andrew and Peter. I'll stop there. Here's the first conversation. First conversation is Jesus finding Philip. I'd like to point out to you here real quick that Jesus has a purpose when he goes into Galilee. Jesus, guys, our God doesn't do something on accident. He doesn't trip into something. He doesn't trip over something and then go, "Hey, what was that?" When he goes into Galilee, he goes with a purpose. And we know that because the text tells us, but then we also know that because he finds what he was looking for. A person named Philip. He finds him. A lot of us might have that kind of experience in our lives where God kind of found us. We weren't really looking for him at the time. We were pretty much happy, maybe, doing our own thing. But he engaged our life, and he came after us, and he found us. And what does he say to him when he finds him? He says, "Follow me." So this first conversation is Jesus going and finding Philip. And I love what he says to him. He just simply says to him, "Follow me." Now again, if you would associate with Philip here, maybe you would do so by thinking, "I remember that time when I became a follower of Jesus." And maybe that's you here today, and you think to yourself, I remember that time. That would be one of those past experiences for me. One of my past experiences would be when I became a follower of Jesus. Maybe it's one of those moments that completely changed your life. Becoming a follower of Jesus has a habit of doing that. When we become a follower of Jesus, it changes everything. God comes into our life. He finds us and he wants us to come to him exactly how we are, but he has no intention of leaving us that way. And so it completely changes our lives. And maybe that's true for you. I love Philip's response. Let's continue and look at verse 45. Philip then found Nathanael. Hold on a second. If our response to a moment changes everything, we see Philip's response, right? How does he respond? He doesn't respond with, "Okay." He responds with action. Listen, when he becomes a follower of Jesus, he immediately goes and finds Nathanael. That's what he does. "Follow me." His response is seen because he goes and gets Nathanael, Listen, how does he respond? He responds with action. Response is clearly seen in our actions. How we respond to those moments is clearly seen in our actions. I love what he tells him. He runs and finds Nathanael. Let's go back to the text, 45. Philip finds Nathanael and says to him, "We have found him." This is what he says. He just kind of, "We found him." Now, maybe you're like me, and if that's the only part of the statement you get, you kind of go, "You found who?" Who's the him? And this is a critical thing we've got to think about, and we need to talk about, because who he is really either makes this an insignificant moment or a massive moment. So he goes on and he says, "We found him. We found him whom Moses in the law and the prophets wrote about." Now, I don't want to take this for granted. So the truth is that some of us in the room may not know what he's talking about, right? And so we want to kind of set this up. Help us understand, who is the him? Well, the him is who Moses and the prophets wrote about. So who did they write about? What does Nathanael know? And what does Philip know that we might not know? See, Moses and the prophets are the ones who wrote what we would call today the Old Testament. The majority of the Old Testament was written by Moses, the books of the law, and then after that you have all these different pieces of the Old Testament, many of which are written by the prophets primarily. Now, in the Old Testament, there's this storyline that begins to take place, and it's really significant. So, after creation, God creates, and then sin enters the world, and there becomes a separation because of sin. And the reason that is because God is so perfect that if sin is in his presence, it automatically detracts from that level of perfection. And so there automatically has to be separation so that his perfection is not tainted. Okay? So there's this massive separation that occurs. And God is over there, and imperfection or sin is over here. Now, here's the problem. This becomes really personal because I am a sinner. Now, I'm a sinner in two ways. Okay, the first is by nature, meaning that I was born into this position. I was born into this broken separation. So just by the nature of where I'm born, and I'm born into this position, I am, by nature, I'm broken. I'm a sinner. But then worse than that, shamefully, I have to admit to you, I oftentimes, like daily, I have a decision to make. And it's very often that I know the decision is right on this hand and it's wrong on this hand. And you know what I deliberately do? Is I choose the wrong thing. And that's sin, right? I'm not just born into by nature a sinner. I'm a sinner because of my choice. I actually choose it deliberately, premeditatedly sometimes. Now that creates a huge problem. Because of the sin in my life, I have no hope of fixing this problem. This great chasm, this massive gap that has now been created because of my sin and his perfection. Now, this is where Moses and the prophets come in. They tell us about that, but then the prophets begin to tell us of the promises of God, of things to come. And they begin to say, listen, God sees your position. Not only that, he sees who you are and that you are utterly helpless. And you're hopeless by yourself. And he sees this for what it is. He's perfect. I am far from it. And left to myself, I will never fix this problem. And so God does something amazing. He begins to speak through his prophets, and he tells the people of Israel and anybody who would listen, God is going to send someone to fix this problem, to redeem my sin, to mend the relationship. He's going to give me a way to get back into the presence of perfection with my Creator. Now, that's going to be awesome. So what do the prophets do? They begin to refer to this person because he says, listen, I'm only going to send one. So they start referring to him as the chosen one, the anointed one. They say, listen, how will we know? And God starts through other prophecies to tell him, listen, he's going to come as a king. He's going to come as a servant. He's on my behalf going to come. So they start getting all of these ways to explain who is coming. He's a redeemer. He's a servant of God. He's the anointed one. He's the chosen one. He's the Messiah. Often we translate that the Christ. He's a king coming from God. Now, here's the problem. Up until this point, these are all titles. Meaning right now, what they know is that there's a position of one coming. There's a title for the one who will come. But listen, they don't know his name. They don't know who he is. So when Philip runs to Nathanael and says, "We found him," Nathanael looks at him and he's like, "What are you talking about? We found him of whom Moses and the prophets wrote about." And the next word is so crucial. Go back to the text with me. In verse 45, "We have found him of whom Moses and the prophets wrote about, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Why is this so crucial? Because Jesus is his name. All of a sudden, it's not a title anymore. It's a name. All of a sudden, it's no longer a position of promise of one to come. It's a person. All of a sudden, it's not something to look forward to. It's something that is standing in front of us. And we can know him. And we can have a relationship with him. All of a sudden, the titles no longer matter because Jesus is the him. And he's got a name. And he's from Nazareth. He's the son of Joseph. This is incredible. Remember, if who the him is really going to kind of set up how big of a moment is this going to be, right now, this is setting up to be a moment. You with me? Like, if a moment has the ability to change everything, this moment has the ability to change everything. Let's look at how Nathanael responds. Remember, a response to those kind of moment, those are the things that change everything, right? The moment sets the stage for us, but the response we give to it determines how it changes everything. So let's look at his response. He says to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Kind of skeptical. "Listen, I know who you're talking about, but like, for real? Because this is kind of a big deal if you found him. If you found him, I mean, the one that Moses and the prophets wrote about." Now, before we jump too hard on him for being skeptical, some of us might think, "I can't believe this guy doesn't just believe. I mean, Jesus is there, you know?" But the truth is, there's something about Jesus that we don't want to take for granted that Nathanael knows. And that is, see, in those prophecies, the prophets wrote that the Messiah, that chosen one, is going to come from Bethlehem. He's going to be born in Bethlehem. So when he says he's from Nazareth, he's like, hold on a second, how can that be? He's intelligent. He's being critical. He's using critical thinking. He's not being a complete moron about this, all right? But what he doesn't know is what you and I know. I mean, we celebrate this every Christmas, right? Because of the census, his mother and his father have to move and go to Bethlehem for the census. And then at some point in time, they return back to Nazareth. So he is from Nazareth, but he was born at Bethlehem. Nathanael might not know that. And so he kind of questions. I love Philip's response to his friend. Listen, if you would associate with Philip as somebody who's a follower of Jesus today, Philip's response can give us so much wisdom. He simply says to him, when he goes to get Nathanael, he simply says this, "Come and see." I love that. Whether you've been a follower of Jesus for a week, an hour, or 12 years, there are times when talking to people, we would love that they would become followers of Jesus. They have really good questions. So maybe you're here today and you have questions. That's awesome. Okay? There's nothing wrong with asking some questions and trying to figure it out. And when that happens, one of the best things we can do is, hey, just come and see. Just come and hear about Jesus. Just come and read the Bible with me. Just come and meet Jesus. Because if you meet Jesus, he is incredible. I love his response. So he simply says to his friend, "Come and see." And this introduces to us the third conversation. Now remember, Responses to moments change everything. And the first response we see from Nathanael is that he actually does what his friend invites him to do, which is come and see. And we know that because starting in the next verse, it sets up this last conversation where Nathanael is going to meet Jesus. Let's look at it together. In verse 47, right after Philip says, come and see, it tells us that Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him. When Philip says, come and see, Nathanael takes his invitation. He goes with him to meet Jesus. Jesus saw Nathanael coming to him and said of him, behold an Israelite indeed in whom there is no deceit. He knows him. And he says, hey, Nathanael is right there. Let me tell you about him. Now, Nathanael somewhat hears it. It's got to be close enough that he hears the words of Jesus. His response to him is, how do you know me? This is how I know at this point. Nathanael hasn't bought this yet. He might know and understand who the him is. He might understand Jesus is the one who Moses and the prophets wrote about. That's what you're telling me. But he hasn't bought it yet. He hasn't been convinced. He's just taken the first step. And he's gonna go and he's gonna say, okay, introduce me to Jesus and let me figure this out for myself. I love that. So he does. And he says to Jesus, how do you know me? Jesus answers and says to him, before Philip called you when you were under the fig tree, I saw you there. Listen, this third conversation is when Nathanael meets Jesus. This is the experience. Remember we were talking about experiences? Experiences shape our lives. When you meet Jesus, it's an experience. It has the opportunity to shape our life, to shape your life. Here's the moment. If you were to boil, remember if you were to take experiences and boil them all down to the moment that the light switch flips, it turns the corner, the whole thing swings on the hinges. Like if you get it down to the moment, what's the moment? Here's the moment. In this statement, when Jesus says to him, before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you. At that moment, Jesus shows who he is. Here's how he does that. There's a few things that are unique to the character of our God. One of them is what we see here, and it's called omniscience. That's like a really big 10,000-letter word that means he possesses all knowledge, perfect knowledge of everything past, present, and future. That's what that means. But now that kind of a character trait is unique only to our God. You and I don't have that. We have limited knowledge. We have some knowledge about our past of history and what we learn. We do have that. We have some knowledge about the present. That's true. We have some hopes and ideas about the future, but you see how our knowledge is limited. God is not like that. He is not like you and I. His knowledge is unlimited. It's perfect. Everything, past, present, and future. And in this statement, he is saying to Nathanael, I'm God because I know something that otherwise I wouldn't know. Now listen, underneath this fig tree, the Bible doesn't really give us the whole story. It doesn't tell us what happened. It doesn't tell us if under the fig tree he had years ago a momentous, spiritually impactful event that totally, you know, he was crying out to God, and we don't know that. It might simply mean that when Philip found Nathanael in the few verses prior, he found him underneath a fig tree. Okay? I don't really know. But the truth here remains because Nathanael knows Jesus wasn't there. Put yourself in his mind for just a moment and kind of listen to his thoughts. You know, you could hear him kind of say, wait a second, I was under a fig tree, you're right about that, but you weren't there. I was there, but you weren't there. How do you know that I was under the fig tree? Maybe somebody told you, but nobody else was there. Maybe it was just 5 minutes ago or whatever when Philip found me, but he's with me. He couldn't have told you yet. How would you know that I was under a fig tree? Listen, the only person who would know I was under that fig tree would be God. And you start to see how this moment shapes up. I love his response. If moments have the ability and can change everything, and our responses to to those kind of moments, our responses change everything. Then we've got to look at his response. So let's go back to the text. Nathanael answered him and says, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." This is the moment. Jesus shows who he is. And Nathanael's sitting there going, "There's no way you would know that unless you're God. You're God. You're the Son of God. You're the King of Israel. You're the Messiah. You're the chosen one. You actually are the Redeemer. You're the one Moses and the law and the prophets wrote about. It's you." And all of a sudden, this experience of meeting Jesus in the moment where Jesus shows him who he is, the moment comes to fruition and his response changes everything because Nathanael believes. This is incredible. And as we've seen all of these responses taking place in these conversations, let's look at one more. Let's look at the way Jesus responds to Nathanael. Does he go back to him and go, no, I'm not him? That's not what he says. Look with me at verse 49, and we'll read through the end of the chapter. Nathanael answered him and said, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered and said to Nathanael, "Because I said to you that I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe me? You will see greater things than these." And he said to him, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see the heavens opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man." Listen, here's what he's saying right here. Very simply. He's saying, Nathanael, you believed me because I showed you my omniscience. You haven't seen anything yet. That's only one portion of my character. Just wait. Now let me let you in on the rest of the picture. If you were to read the rest of this narrative of the book of John, this is what happens. God, Jesus, he goes around, he starts meeting people. He meets people who are deaf and he gives them back the ability to hear. He meets people who are lame and he gives them the ability to walk. Not limp, he gives them the ability to rise up, pick up their bed and take off running. He meets people who are blind and he gives them sight. He meets people who have leprosy and he heals them physically. He meets people who are the outcasts of society. The very people who are thrown outside of the city. He finds them, brings them in, and they are possessed with demons. And he takes the demons and outcasts the demons and reunites them with society. He goes beyond all of that. He doesn't just show his power over the physical body, but over also the demons. And then on top of that, he shows it over the grave because he meets people who are dead. And after days, he goes to them and finds them in their grave. And he says, "Come out here." And he raises them from the dead and people marvel. And if that's not enough, right? You haven't seen anything yet. Because remember that great divide the prophets wrote about and said, "Listen, somebody is coming that's going to fix this." That's what he does. He takes all of the sin in my life and in your life, the sins of the world, and he puts them on his own self, on his own shoulders, and he dies a bloody, murderous death on a cross. And when he does that, he does take the penalty for my sin. That's true. You know what else he does? He gives me his perfection. And now he has amended this relationship so that I might once again walk into the presence of perfection, not detracting from that level of glory, purity, perfection, not detracting from it, but I can stand in its midst, not because of what I have done, but because of what he did for me. And then 3 days later, he rises again. He doesn't just show that he has power over the grave for other people. He has power over the grave when he dies. And he comes back to life. And in his life, he gives us life. Not only do I have the right to stand inside of the perfection and in the presence of that level of perfection, with God, but I can do so for eternity because he's alive. This is incredible. Listen, so what he says to Nathanael is, you are impressed and you believe because of my omniscience, because of what I said to you? You haven't seen anything yet. This is incredible. Listen, a moment can change everything. It has the ability to wreck or bring great joy. A moment can change everything. It sets the stage. The platform is cleared. That moment can change everything. And in this case, it does for Nathanael because he believes. Our response to those moments changes everything. How would you respond to that moment? How would you and I respond? Let me ask it a little bit different. Who are you in this story? Let me put it this way. Who would you more associate with? Would you associate with Philip, somebody who coming in these doors today and taking a seat? You would have come in, and before I started talking, you would have said, I'm a follower of Jesus. Maybe that would be you. And you think back to that moment that it completely changed your life, where you became a follower of Jesus. You think back to that experience and how nothing has been the same since. Or maybe you would identify more with Nathanael. You came today, not because you're a follower of Jesus, but maybe because somebody invited you. Maybe a friend, a family member, maybe a coworker or a neighbor. And they said, hey, why don't you just come. Just come and see. Come and see what we're about. Come and just visit our church. Come and have an awesome meal. Come and be with us just for a couple hours. All right. For whatever reason, you came. And maybe like Nathanael, you come and you're hearing about Jesus, and you're like, man, this is, you know, maybe you have questions, that's okay, but like, you're trying to figure this out. Would you associate with Nathanael or with Philip? Kind of, which one? Let me ask you a question. If you're Philip, let me ask you this question. If the response we see, clearly seen in action, for Philip, as a follower of Jesus, is he goes and gets a friend. He goes and gets Nathanael. Here's my question I want you to walk out of here with today. Very simply, is this question. Who are you going to go and talk to about Jesus this week? Which family member, which friend, which coworker, which neighbor, which person in your life needs to hear about Jesus? Because like Philip, once he met Jesus, he's like, listen, I can't. Who needs Nathanael? Come here. He's got to go get somebody. Who do you need to go and talk to about Jesus? This week is in some ways unlike so many of our weeks throughout the year because we have some unique opportunities and relationships that come around us. An awesome time. So who this week are you going to talk to about Jesus? If you would identify with Philip, that's the question I want you to try to answer. But if you're Nathanael, a little bit different question. See, Nathanael, a friend brought him and said, listen, you got to come and meet Jesus. So he does. Having some of his questions answered, maybe still some more. But at this moment, he's presented with who Jesus is. And his response was to believe. So here's my simple question to you. If you came in today and through the last few minutes, you would say, yeah, I would identify with Nathanael. That's who I would identify with. Here's my question for you. Will you believe? Just honestly answer that. Will you believe? Experiences shape our lives. But listen, moments can change everything. And today, maybe for you, is one of those moments. And right now is one of those moments where this moment can, it has the ability, the stage is set, Jesus is in front of you, and you have the opportunity. I mean, this could change everything for you. Your response to moments like this change everything? And here's the question I want you to respond to, is either one of these. And if you're Nathaniel, I would ask you simply, I'd beg with you, will you believe? Believe that Jesus is exactly who he said he is. He is the Son of God. He's the one that Moses and the prophets wrote about. The reason that that's significant is because he is the one who came and died in our place so that this great chasm of separation could be mended. Now, if you would answer that question yes in your mind, here's what I would ask you to do is at some point today, find me. I'm going to stay for the meal. I can't wait to eat, actually. And I'm going to be here. Come and find me. Come and find one of the people that were up here singing. Find somebody who was at the door when you came in. Find somebody and say, hey, help me understand. I'm willing to believe, but I have some questions. I'm willing to believe. What's that look like? What's that mean? What's the next step for me? We want to talk to you. I want to talk to you. They want to talk to you. Let's pray real quick, and then I believe they're going to come back up. We're going to sing another song before you. Dear God, thank you so much for today. Thank you so much for the opportunity that we get just to come together to sing. I love singing to you and worshiping you. Thank you for that.